Welcome to Strength for the Journey. Thanks for joining us again. Strength for the Journey is a radio program designed to strengthen the believer for the days that lie ahead. We have a website at strength4thejourney.com, and this is radio program number 123. Today I have my good friend David Williams back on the program. David, thanks for joining.
Always a pleasure.
I have a topic today I want to speak about, and the Lord gave me a word the other morning, and it's something that many people may not be able to apply because they are still in their place of bondage. They haven't left their place of comfort and followed the Lord's leading to go where He's called them to go or do what they've been called to do. We have a number of people that come to Panama and they pretty much leave their place of comfort and find that there's a lot of challenges out there in the wilderness as they're on their way to the promised land. And this word that I was given was, there are giants in the land. Why? To find the overcomers. Most will never enter God's place of promise because they aren't willing to pay the price that God paid. He gave all of Himself, but they're not willing to give all of themselves. Not only is the wilderness a place of testing, but the land of promise is as well. Just as God put a test in the garden, a test of trust in the garden, there are tests of trust even in the promised land. The giants were in the land to weed out those who really didn't trust. One may claim to trust God, but overcoming giants will demonstrate that you really do. You know, one of the things that I have found leaving my place of comfort back in the States 4 years ago, I didn't realize what the challenges were that were going to stand in front of me. I was willing to leave, but not knowing what was lying ahead. And I think that's just an initiation of putting your trust into action is when you finally say, Lord, I know you're telling me to do this. I don't know where we're going, but I'm willing to trust you. Well, of course, then the challenges begin. Then once you find out, I don't speak the language. How am I going to communicate with these people? How is that going to happen? But you don't know what the challenge is going to be until you put yourself in that place of being challenged. And so this is, as you can probably well relate, you didn't know where you're going to live. You didn't know how long that money you brought, which wasn't a whole lot, was going to last. But yet you're willing to be obedient, not knowing all the how it was all going to work out. You just knew God said go. And I think this is where the initiation of trust begins, that you have to exercise your trust. A lot of people say, well, I trust God. Well, really? Let's see. Well, Lord, I won't deny you. Well, let's see. You know, we don't know what's inside of us until we get tested. And many people don't even want to get tested because they don't want to find out, maybe. You know, the mirror's not a pleasant place to look sometimes.
Well, we talk about a lot, you and I, leaving that place of comfort. And in Panama, for those who have grown up in the United States, is a challenge. And it's not a bad life, not complaining by any means, but it is very different. It's not what we're accustomed to. The language is different. We're just challenged at every step of the journey. And but you know, we were talking about before we started recording how you and I both have rather large families by today's standards, and we both have a lot of sons. And no father desires that his son would grow up to be effeminate or passive or you know, weak-willed or limp-wristed. You know, I mean, we as a son, you know, as a father, you hope for your sons that they'll be strong, that they'll be mighty, that they'll be courageous, that they'll exhibit the attributes that a man is supposed to exhibit to bring glory to God. And, you know, so I think we've been talking about scriptures like, you know, well, first off, in Matthew 24, when Jesus is talking about the last days, he says that there will be wars and rumors of wars, but we're to see to it that we're not alarmed, that we're not troubled by that. And of course, he's speaking on a natural plane, but I would say not to counter the words of Jesus, but I would say that we should be troubled, we should be provoked to action when we consider the war that is going on around us spiritually, the battle that is being waged for our souls. You know, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3 says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier." And that's an interesting thing, to has chosen him to be a soldier. You know, I would say that that there is a draft in effect today, and it's a draft that is being executed by the Lord, saying, "Those who are called by my name, will you step up to the plate? Will you do battle?" You know, the promises come to them who overcome.
You know that when you enlist in the army or any military service, you pretty much write your own rights away. Your life is no longer your own. You've been bought. You signed your life away. And I believe that's the way it's supposed to be. When we give our life to the Lord, we no longer own ourselves. We're just like in the Lord's army now. And one of the first things he said to me when I was nominated to be the leader of the men's ministry in this ministry here by Panamanians, after only being here 5 months and not even speaking the language, I was joking with somebody after I stood before everybody and just thanked them for their vote of confidence. And I just kind of was joking. So as I was walking away, and I said, "Well, I guess I'm in the army now." And I heard the Lord speak right back to me. "Yep, you are." And I didn't realize what it was like to enlist in the Lord's army. It's you're not yourself anymore. You're now owned. And you mentioned Matthew 24 a minute ago. And I just thinking about the scriptures that talks about, this is in verse 37 of chapter 24. "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and they knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." We have to understand that is a huge warning of what it's going to be like when the Lord's just before he comes. Is everybody's going to be in this state of denial. This guy had preached for 100 years. There's a flood coming. The Lord gave Noah some very clear instructions in Matthew chapter 6. And it says in verse 13, "God said to Noah, 'The end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shalt thou make in the ark, and shall pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is the fashion which shalt thou make of.'" And so he goes on and gives the entire instructions of Noah. Now, look how focused Noah was for 100 years. It didn't rain, it didn't flood, but he stayed focused on the tasks that was in front of him, knowing the word of the Lord was true. And this is something I think that all of us have to really examine in our own life, is that has God given us clear instructions of what he wants us to do? Because there was an old world that was getting ready to go away, and there was a new world that was beginning, that was coming. And was Noah being obedient to prepare for the new world and not focused on the old world anymore? Many people, they're not hearing the Lord's voice right now of what he wants them to do. They're still living in the old world, eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, and everything's just wonderful. And they're not listening to the voice of the prophets right now. They're calling them, those are doom and gloom prophets. You know, they're not the real voice of the Lord. The Lord's voice is this and that that's making me feel good right now. And so I can continue to eat and drink and be merry and live life as it's always been for me. But I'm telling you right now, those that are listening, that the old world is getting ready to go away and there's a new world that's coming in. God is getting ready to do something with the obedient, and he's looking for the enlisted ones to use. And he's looking for a hand that says, "Lord, use me. I don't know where I'm going, what you want me to do." But you know, when he said, "Follow me," that means that there had to be something that you had to leave to follow. And God's not into making excuses. "Well, Lord, let me go bury this guy," or "let me, you know, I just did this. I just bought a yoke of oxen. I got some land I just bought, and I got a new house." You know, I'm seeing now that many people living in the old world, and they're making excuses of not doing what God's called them to do, because they want to continue to live in this wonderful little land that they've always lived in. And it's like remodeling your house before it catches fire. You know, how futile is your life work? Doing what you think is a good thing, but it's not what God's called you to do. It's like remodeling your house just before it catches fire. You're spending your time doing all sorts of great stuff, but what is it really going to amount to when it's tested by fire?
Over a century of hard work, you'd think Noah could have found an acceptable excuse to discontinue the work that he'd been called to. That's some serious faith. That's some due diligence to stick with it for that period of time.
Well, look at the ridicule he must have been under. Just think of the people laughing and mocking him, and what are you doing? What is this thing? You know, and they just laughed and mocked until the day the door of the ark was shut. And you got to realize that God shut the door. And once that door was shut, the fate of those on the inside was sealed and the fate of those on the outside was sealed. John Phillips and I just did a program two programs ago. And one of the things is there is a day coming. There is a day that God already knows. There is a day. And it's not, you can't pray away that day. You can't say, well, I decree and declare that this day is extended, that we get extra innings now and blah, blah, blah. You know what? God is God. He's on the throne. We are not on the throne. We think that we can just speak thus and this and that, and all of a sudden we become God. I mean, God is God, and we are his servants, supposedly. And we have to learn that we have to listen to his instructions and be obedient. That's what makes us sons, is that we are willing to be corrected and chastised, because all children need to be corrected. And so are we his child? Or are we not?
Right. And you know, you're referencing Hebrews 12, and in verse 7 it says, if ye endure chastening, and this is in the King James, other translations say, issue it more as a command that says endure hardship. But the King James says, if ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. You know, furthermore, we've all had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live?
You know, I wrote an article a while back. It's called Promised Land or Bust. And I want to read this because our hearts have to be so set that we are determined to reach the land of promise that God's given us, that nothing can stop us. There's no contrary wind that's going to blow us off our course. We have to be like Jesus. When he knew his destiny was in Jerusalem, he set his face like a flint. He set his face toward Jerusalem that there's nothing that's going to distract me, delay me. I'm going to be about my Father's business. He said that ever since he was a little kid. I must be about my Father's business. The land of promise, or better known as the promised land, isn't the land of ease and comfort, but the land of obedience. A land filled with the obedient hearted. The land of the disobedient hearted is the land of bondage. A land where a heavy-handed taskmaster is needed to teach the hard-hearted and the rebellious. We make the land where we live the land of freedom or the land of bondage by our obedience or disobedience. The land or place we dwell isn't free just because our fathers made it free. It's free because their children keep themselves free. Free from the bondage of sin by the choices they make, not the ones their forefathers made. The choices we make as God's people either place us in bondage or keep us free, creating within us the land of the free or the home of the slave. Jesus said, behold, the kingdom of God is within you. The promised land isn't necessarily a physical location, but a location of one's heart. Our hearts will naturally gravitate and be drawn to what we treasure. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. As individuals, what do we treasure? What have we set our affections upon? Colossians 3:2 states, set your affection on the things above, not the things on the earth. As children of the Most High, we must ask ourselves, who and where is the treasure we seek? Jesus wants to be our treasure, so that our heart will be with him and filled with him. Our heart is ultimately filled with the treasure we seek. The things of this world or the things of God, the love of this world or the love of God. If we have a heart for this world, we will be filled with a love from this world. If we truly have a love for God, we will treasure and thereby be filled with the love from God. We can't have both. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. The evidence of a man's love for God is his obedience to him. Jesus said, if a man loves me, he will keep my words. True love and obedience are linked together and cannot be separated. Obedience is simply a manifestation in the fruit of the obedient hearted. Only through the action of a yielded heart can the fruit of obedience ever manifest. Obedience doesn't happen by accident or by chance. It happens by choice. It happens on purpose and by determination to please our guide as we follow his roadmap to the promised land. One must pursue the will of God in order to do the will of God. The promise is for the obedient-hearted and determined. If you be willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. Our love for God is the fuel for the journey to the promised land. Jesus said, "If thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and all thy strength, this is the first commandment." If we will obey this command first and foremost, establishing our love for him as the foundation for all we think and do, we will keep our tank full for the journey, and the reward will be unimaginable. Eye has not seen nor ear heard, neither has entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love him. His love for us determined our deliverance. Our love for him will determine our destination. You know, this is really first and foremost, how bad do we want it? Are we determined to reach that place of promise that God has for each one of our lives? Are we really that determined to find out the destiny that God created us for? What is the purpose of our creation? When I first got saved, I knew I should have been dead so many times. I knew it wasn't by chance that I was alive. And that was what really propelled me to find out what's the reason why I'm alive. I should be dead so many times. God must have a plan. So it put that desire in me to find out what it was ever since the very beginning when I first knew he was real some 30 years ago. And I think that reality has to keep us going to fulfill the purpose that God created us and has kept us alive, gave us woke us up this morning. I mean, it's just God's purpose and plan that we're even alive. You're even listening to the radio program right now. God has a plan still in effect, and he's trying to inspire that plan or that drive inside of you to find it and not to quit until you find it and pursue it and fulfill it ultimately.
Well, and we've been talking a lot about lately the fact that in the promised land, there were giants there prior to the children of Israel's arrival. And we think, well, why would a sovereign God, an all-powerful God, a loving father, why would he allow giants to be inhabiting the land prior to the arrival of his chosen people? And I'll tell you, this sovereign God, this loving father, he allows opposition and resistance and enemies because he wants us to be strong. He wants to test our faith in him, see if we really do believe him. And, you know, over and over again, as we referenced, the promises in Scripture are to him who overcome. And I'll just read a few of those. In 1 John chapter 5, it says, "For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Who is he that overcometh the world, but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God?" In Revelation chapter 2, in verse 7, it says, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." In verse 11, it says, "He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death." In verse 17, it says, "To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it." In verse 26, it says, "He that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations." In the next chapter, chapter 3, it says, "He that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot out his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels." In verse 12, it says, "Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name." And in verse 21, it says, "To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame." And that's a key right there. "Even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne." In other words, we're children of our Father. And like Jesus said, no student is above his teacher. No servant is above his master. It's enough to be like the teacher, enough to be like the master. And so when we battle and we overcome, it's being like our master. We're being like our older brother, Jesus. We're overcoming. And we're told that we overcome through through the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And so obviously it's his victory that's won, but we're required to walk in that victory.
Like I say, there's no testimony until there's a test. You know, the testimony comes after the test. You know, I was thinking about this word that I was given the other morning. It said that just as God put a test of trust in the garden, there are tests of trust even in the promised land. The giants were in the land to weed out those who really didn't trust. And I was going back, we were just a moment ago before the program, we were going back to Numbers chapter 13. And in this place, they brought these clusters of grapes that it took two people to carry upon a staff. And so they bring this fruit and showed them the fruit of the land. And it says in verse 27 of chapter 13, it says, And they told him and said, "We came unto the land whither thou sentest, and surely it flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it." And they had this, so they had this giant grapes on this pole demonstrating the blessing that was in this land. Surely it is a land that flows with milk and honey. And it said in verse 28, it says, "Nevertheless," and I wrote alongside this a while back, "but," excuse, "the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there." In other words, there were giants in the land. And then and all of a sudden, Caleb stands up and stilled the people before us and says, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." We're able to overcome it. This is, God's looking for the overcomers. And suddenly, Caleb stands up. And all of a sudden, the other people said, "We be not be able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we." And they brought up an evil report of the land. So God saw this as an evil report. And it goes on, and God brings this judgment against the unbelieving. And it says here, "Because the people was not able to bring this people into the land, which I swear unto, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness." And it goes on, it goes down to verse 22 in chapter 14. "Because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have tempted me now these 10 times and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and has followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereinto he went, and his seed shall possess it." You know, this is really the dividing line. What is in front of our lives that God has called us to do that's hindering us from doing it? Are we looking for excuses because it's too difficult, because you don't see how you could possibly do it? I was just thinking, going back over something that I'd written a while back, that everything that God has done in my life in this place has been bigger than I had anticipated. Whatever project I put my hand to do, whether it was a one-night crusade turned into a three-night crusade, whether it was an outdoor event in a park that I had a vision of with Janet and Ray Clark doing demonstrations and preaching in the town square, turned into multiple cities all over Panama, including places like the Albrook Mall and the Carousel Food Court, where people were, or going into the children's hospital. All these things were just happened because I was willing to be obedient and go where God said to go, not even speaking the language, and God would put the right people in my path and give me favor and connections to make all this thing happen. But if I made excuses, well, I can't do that. I don't even speak the language. How's that going to happen? Nothing of these other events that have happened would have ever happened. Every little thing that has started, the greenhouse that we built, was going to be a small greenhouse. It turned out to a huge greenhouse. Now there's a second greenhouse. The tract order that we'd order was going to be 10 or 20,000. It turned into 180,000 order tracts. But everything that the seed that God put in my heart was just a seed. It was just an act. Will you be willing and obedient? And you watch what grows. You go in to find some grapes and they turned out so big that you had to, two guys had to carry one cluster on their shoulders. The promises that are in the promised land are bigger than you can imagine, but you have to be willing to pay the price to get there. And that's the part that most people, they aren't willing to pay the price to get there. The contrary winds blow them off course. The giants in the land make them, give them excuses not to go in, and they miss what God has.
You know, I think the maybe the title of this program should be No Excuses. I'm thinking about the type of person that God seeks out and that he desires and the type of person that is honored in Scripture. I think of Jonathan and his armor bearer, you know, with opposing troops up above them, and they've got to climb a cliff to get to these guys. And they say, well, let's go ahead and tire ourselves out climbing this cliff. And if when we get to the top of this cliff and we're all tired from climbing it, if they say, you know, if they challenge us, then we'll know the Lord's given them to us in our hand and we'll go for it. And they're victorious. I mean, obviously, that's the kind of person that's not placing their trust in their own ability and their own strength, or they wouldn't weaken their own strength prior to going into battle. We need to understand that God is a father the way that we are a father. He's patterned our fatherhood after his own, and we don't look for excuses from our sons. If we tell them to do something, mm-hmm. we expect it to be done.
That's right. You know, just think about Joseph. You know, here Joseph gets this huge job. Well, I'm going to make you in charge of this whole project. What? I can't do this. This is bigger than me. But yet he just stepped in obedience. I believe that it's just God just gave him the wisdom every day. He knew what to do. Let's build silos over here. Let's not store it in one place. But also God intervened because there was a bountiful harvest before that famine began. But that wasn't something that was anticipated. It was God working his plan out in coordination to our obedience, that there was an abundance. And that's why I'm seeing people that come here that, and this is just a microcosm of what God's doing. We're not saying Panama is the place. Maybe God's calling you someplace else. That doesn't really matter. It's just being obedient, wherever it may be, that there's abundance where your obedience is, that there's a bountiful harvest in your acts of obedience. So God sees that, and he all of a sudden, he just makes a way where there seems to be no way if you just step out in faith. But it says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. So so if you never act on your faith, how are you ever going to please him? You can say you have faith all you want. You can quote all the scriptures in the world. But yet, if you don't act, if you don't live this thing out, it really amounts to nothing. It's just a matter of nothing. So, David, the program's disappeared underneath our feet. Thanks again for joining, David.
Oh, thank you.
Well, God bless you for listening. Again, our website is strength with the number 4, thejourney.com, and we'll see you next time. For the